Shalom, everyone. Welcome to the Effortless Mom Podcast, cleaner eating, healthier living for the melanated mama. We provide actionable steps to help you make healthy living look effortless. Now, today, the idea is mental health. We're focusing on confessions from a seasoned mother, which seasoned, all that means is that you had some experience, you made some mistakes, and you could tell somebody how not to repeat them. So today, I would love to welcome the amazing award-winning poet, fiction and nonfiction writer, educator, and inspirational mother, Shonda Buchanan. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Navi. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited you're here. I want to jump right into it because your story is so powerful. So I would love if you would just share a little more about yourself and just a little more about your memoir and what you've written on Black Indian.
So I am from Kalamazoo, Michigan, born and raised. I moved to Los Angeles when I was 18. Literally probably on the wind, you know, trying to get out of Kalamazoo because it was such a small town. It didn't have what felt to me like a supportive community for artists. And I was a poet, a writer. My head was always in the clouds, you know, just really trying to create something. So I moved to LA when I was 18. And actually, this is a story not a lot of people know. I was a nanny when I moved to Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
So, right. And so, and absolutely, for this program, it's really important that I talk about how being a nanny for someone else helped me be a better parent. So at 18, I'm this, like, you know, I had watched a couple of my cousins and my nephews and my nieces, but just kind of, even before I had an actual career, before I went to college, I was just kind of caretaking for these kids. And the skills that I used to, that I learned as a nanny, I used to raise my daughter as well. So so that's even like prior to my writing, to my book, you know, Black Indian. So the other thing, I work at Loyola Marymount University right now. I am a professor there. I also am the author of Black Indian, which I'll talk about in a moment. I am a traveler. You know, I love international travel. In fact, my daughter had her passport, gosh, before she was one. So, and her first out-of-country trip was when she was 14.
Wow.
15, and then at 14, I think we went, 12, England? Oh, 12 Mexico, right. 12 Mexico, 14 England, 15 Africa, and then... Africa and England? Are you sure? Oh, my daughter's... She's in Africa first and then England. Twice. She was in England twice.
Wow.
So it was England, Africa, and then England at 18. Yeah, because you remember I taught in England for six weeks, and I was a visiting professor. Technically, I was a British citizen because I had to be a British citizen to teach there.
Oh,
and then
wow.
She came after graduation. But so I'm a traveler as well. I think all of those things just basically make me who I am. You know, it's the culmination. It's the feeling that I needed creativity in my life. The sensibility that I needed, I wanted to be a good mom. I'm just going to say it because my mom will never listen to this. I wanted to be a better mom than my mom. and then I knew writing and traveling were going to be a part of my life, even if I was a mother. So yeah, so that's basically a little bit about me, you know, in a nutshell.
You know, I love many of the points that you just said there, because for travel, that's something that I've done. And I truly believe that also helped me become a better mother on that regard. And then, though I wasn't a nanny, I was a teacher's assistant when I was 16 to a private school. And I did that for a while. And then I came back. And I feel like all those moments really teach you how to care for other kids with compassion. And it teaches you to how to care for your own children.
Yes.
And then I can also lay about being a better mother, because, you know, though my mother will actually listen to this, you know, she understands where, you know, where she was searching for healing, I was discovering how to heal. So as she was healing later in life, I had the opportunity to learn from her mistakes as well as try not to make my own. So, you know, it's something that's valid that people need to hear. Like, it's okay if you want to be better than how your parents were, because we all make mistakes, right?
Right. No, I think that's a really valid point. The thing is, depending on your upbringing, right, if you are have a close relationship with your mother and or father, whoever your caregiver is, or you're the person who provides that, you know, that care for you, you get to kind of define the kind of caregiver you want to be as well. Mm-hmm. Right. And for people who are come from a supportive family, usually they have a good role model.
Right.
Right. And parenting. So for example, if all you know is a two-parent family or a single parent, a mom or a dad who only provides you with love and caring and understanding, and I mean, this is really my daughter's relationship with her husband and their child. They raised my grandson as an amazingly well-behaved child. As he talks in the background,
I love that. That's and so well-behaved. He's exploring himself, so it's wonderful.
He is. He's like, he's all into puzzles, and you know, he's doing everything right now. So if that's all you knew, you know, coming up, likely you're going to be a like that kind of parent or that kind of person in a relationship, right? Supportive, nurturing, understanding, caring, you know, for the most part. And then, you know, for the other side of it, when you come from, for example, I came from a volatile family, mostly single mom. Mm-hmm. She had, my gosh, there were six of us for a long time, and then a seventh child, wow. The last boy. But it was really difficult for her. Her father was an alcoholic. I mean, just a lot of, you know, of issues in her family. Mm-hmm. And so she did the best she could. You know, she did the best she could raising seven kids. And so for me, as the sixth child, fourth girl child, and who's my aunt named me, in fact, you know, my mom had run out of girl names. She was like, somebody named this child. You know, and so my aunt gave me my name, Shonda. So for me, it was like, it was a lot of books and writing became my solace. Wow. And I honestly feel like I grew myself up through books. Right. And then when I was trying to like to redefine myself or redefine myself by relocating, that's when the wheel starts to turn. And it's like, could I do something differently? Like, could I be a better parent? Like, could I not spank, or could I spank less than I was spanked? Could I, you know? So those are the kinds of things that, when we're trying to be a nurturing, a better parent, a nurturing parent, and in fact, we're kind of raising ourselves at the same time when we're raising a child, you know, or we're trying to give the child something that we didn't get ourselves, you know. And I really felt like that with my daughter. I had her when I was 21. I was still going to college. My gosh, that was just, I was going to community college, had my daughter, went back to college, transferred my credits to LMU, where I graduated as well, and was taking her into the classroom. You know, she was coming to class with me and coming to work with me sometimes. And then I had a lot of support with her dad's mom as well. But a lot of it was like, you know, consciously and unconsciously, how to create a better environment, how to give my daughter, and not spoiling her, how to help her be a better woman, person, mother, citizen, black person in America, you know, how to help her think about things critically and creatively for herself.
Right. I mean, that is absolutely beautiful. And I feel like in some ways, the personal development side of things, it definitely mirrors my own personal walk in this, because of the fact that just exploring, like, maybe I can be more than this, and maybe I can spank less, do differently. And so that's where you find your growth. And I love how inspiring is that even while you had her at 21, you didn't stop. You didn't make an excuse of like, well, I got to focus on her. You kept going with your goals. And that's something that a lot of us, including myself, like, it's a struggle. I had a hard time, for example, with our first daughter, because of the fact that I was going to school to be a massage therapist and just learning about, you know, holistic health. And I was gone 15 hours a day because I had a job. And thankfully, I had a supportive husband. Yeah, but it was hard. Yeah, and after having her, and we got pregnant with our second daughter, I'm like, okay, now I'm done with this. Like, not done with massage therapy, but done with just being out of the house so much. That's why I switched gears, and that's where I was led. You know, y'all led me to being a health coach, being a nutritionist, and going in that field and working from home, because, you know, still having a day job and doing health coaching. It's a balance, but I was determined to be home.
Yes. You know, I think that's so beautiful with being determined to be home. So, and we get to do this in the society right now, right? Where we can have an entire lifestyle online, or, you know, our work, our exercise we can do online, our educating our children. In fact, my daughter was just helping my grandson learn another language with her cell phone. And so they were like doing French and Italian this morning, Sunday morning. So like you, so, and I love how you were like, oh no, I'm determined to be home, which is what, in back in the past, we were always home.
Right, we were. Yes.
Out in the workforce, you know, hailing cabs and, you know, and driving for 2 hours to get to a job. We were home with our children.
So. And that's real. And I love, it's so much this mirroring right now, because literally this morning I had our children. So they're learning Hebrew, Italian, and French. You know, like I speak Italian and my husband speaks French. You know, we're not fluent, but we know enough that we can survive. And we're learning Hebrew. So we had the kids doing that well. But yeah, you're so right. Like we have opportunities now to be able to choose to be home. I mean, sometimes it's work and you have to guess and test, but it's not like in the past where you either were able to be home or you were just out working hard. Like my mother, she talks about how when she was pregnant with me, she was working in a factory and she was just doing what she had to do. So it is a blessing in this era to be able to have that choice if we're willing to take that.
Yeah.
I want to shift gears just a little bit, and I want to talk about the traveling that you've done. How would you say that that's made you a better writer / a better mother in the experiences that your daughter has also had?
I love traveling. I was just telling my partner, a homebody and I am not. And so I got an opportunity recently to go to Bahrain to teach creative writing workshops in Bahrain and Dubai. And so amazing, he's an amazing partner, very supportive. He's like, really, you're gonna be gone that long? And I'm like, honey, traveling is breath to me. Traveling is life to me. Traveling is, it enriches me. And that's how I raised my daughter. I raised her to see that we have this entire world in front of us. The world itself, like the world, the earth is not something that denies us, you know, the ability to travel. People deny themselves the ability to travel, or they won't save, or maybe they're afraid. I guess I'll just say I have friends who are afraid to travel alone.
That's a reality.
That's a reality, you know. I love that they have a lot of new Black traveler Instagrams and Facebook pages, and people can go on trips together, and you know, women, black women travelers. And I was like, I've been doing that for years. I made the promise to myself when I was 23, I think, because I loved traveling so much, and I said, I'm going to leave the country at least once a year. And it'll be with or without my daughter, but I would prefer with. But I'm going to somehow make that a part of my life. And I knew I worked for a magazine at the time. And I said, how can I translate the work that I do here into a travel job? And so I started doing a lot of travel writing for my magazine. Wow. And my first out of country trip as a travel writing story was to Belize. And in Belize, and then I went from Belize, I went to a couple of Caribbean islands, West Indian islands. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, okay. And I was an educator at the same time. So I was like, okay. So now that I've traveled out of the country once a year, that's something I love. And now I don't actually want to have to pay for it. How can I, you know, I mean, or let's say that if I have to pay for it, what should I do? And then one of my other colleagues said, you know what? I do conferences out of the country, but I don't do a conference unless I want to go to that country.
Oh, wow.
I said, that's so smart. So I said, okay, if I'm paying for this, I'm going to go to a country I want to go to. So I went to Greece. I've been to Malaysia, France. So I said, okay, I'm Africa, Senegal. But I said, okay, I'm going to travel to places. Of course, I've got a reason for being there, but then I get to see the city, you know? So for me, traveling became a way of opening up the world to my daughter.
Wow.
And helping her be more confident in her own skin, because she knows how to negotiate space. She knows how to negotiate getting from the airport to, we went to Egypt in the end of 2017, and we were there, I think they were there for 2 weeks. I was there for 4 weeks, 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
3 weeks. And, but she knows how to negotiate the space of international travel, of finding a room, booking a room, of booking the tour, you know, whatever we want to see,
mm-hmm.
Speaking to people, ordering the food, you know. So it gives you, me, anyone, I think, a sense of confidence that no matter who we are as people, particularly as African Americans, I would say for me, or, you know, an indigenous person, because I consider myself mixed blood with, you know, mm-hmm. with the writing of my book, Black Indian.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives me a sense that the world is mine, you know, that it's not something that can be kept from me. So it's like, I can go anywhere I want in the world, and I just have an understanding that what I need to do is just be respectful.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
I need a list of all these conferences that you went to, and like, I'm ready to do that as well.
Exactly.
Yes, because like traveling is something where, especially as mothers, we tend to shut off to that after a while. The fact that it's like, well, you know, I have these kids, and how can I do this? But there's so much rich experience that you can have in traveling, and you know, you don't have to travel alone. You can take your children. It's just making it work out for you. So I think that what you said was very powerful, of just making the commitment to yourself, and then on top of that, you know, be determined that whether it's with your children or without your children, make it the best way possible. I think that's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah. And children will have this, again, children will have a sense of, I mean, it's almost like street cred. It's like, oh yeah, I was in Paris last year, and you know, and we went to do X, Y, and Z. And the thing is that, and here's the thing, European children and it seems like everyone else except us mm-hmm. are super well traveled,
mm-hmm.
right? And when I say us, I do say Americans, but also African Americans,
mm-hmm.
and everyone else speaks three languages,
yes,
fluently, except us. You know, unless yes. we maintain that throughout high school and into college, but it's not a requirement. It's not a necessity. Whereas in Africa, they speak their father tongue, their mother tongue, the common tongue, and the money tongue.
Wow. That's
so awesome. They'll speak Wolof, and in Senegal, for example, they can speak Wolof, they can speak French, English, Arabic, you know, wow. the religious tongue, you know? Mm-hmm. So, look at, he's like, yeah, what's going on? And so you're going to speak 5 languages, Angelo, and you're going to be so fluent in life.
And that's the way children should be. I feel like children that are raised in America, we really have a disadvantage, to be honest.
And yeah, so that's true.
Making that point to raise them and say, hey, you're going to learn multiple languages, and because there's more than just us. And so, oh no. Hold on 1 second, everybody. We lost her. We're going to be right back. So for everyone that didn't hear, we had a beautiful, adorable little child turn off the camera, and that's totally okay. So we're going to keep moving.
We're going to keep on keeping on.
Right? All right. So let's just focus a little bit. So would you say that as a mother, did you struggle with balancing motherhood, your career as a writer, and self-care at all?
Oh my gosh. Yes, there were moments in the beginning where when I first had my daughter and I said, okay, now I can't go back to school immediately because I need to pay rent. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, okay, I'm going to get a job and 2 jobs. Mm-hmm. And I did. I got a job at Sizzlers. I was doing some freelance work on the side, freelance mm-hmm. writing for the LA Weekly.
Wow.
And, but it was like, I have to say, if I hadn't have had the support of her dad's mom, mm-hmm. and she was home, she was, you know, a homemaker. And she was like, anytime you want to drop my grandbaby off, you know, just drop her off. And if I'm here, I will totally watch her. And she did. That was incredibly helpful. Mm-hmm. And I try to do the same, you know, for this young man who just turned off my computer. my grandson, I try to do the same for him. But my daughter lives in New York and I live in LA. But whenever I'm here, I try to, as much as possible, give her that sense that, you know, whatever you need, just I'm here for you, you know, for my grandson and for you, so let me know. It was really hard to develop a work-life balance in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I said, okay, some of the things that I'm doing in my career are things that she actually would benefit from in terms of, you know, going to a poetry reading. Wow. And meeting Sonia Sanchez, you know, at a poetry mm-hmm. reading, and, you know, and going to bookstores and meeting other authors at bookstores. And so I said, okay, this part enriches my daughter as well. And then her dad was a rapper. He's a underground like rapper. And so, mm-hmm. you know, she met people who are really huge in the industry now. And mm-hmm. Ava DuVernay is like mm-hmm. one of the first, well, at the time, you know, she was Ava DuVernay and she was rapping at the Good Life in LA. Wow. Mm-hmm. But my daughter was just hanging out with her dad, or we were there. And so we were like, okay, we're young. We are educated, you know, how can we make this work? So that's what I did. You know, I was trying to do my art and my craft at the same time.
Wow.
And then, you know, and also just trying to make sure that she got experiences that, you know, she wouldn't get if she was just kind of home. Mm. I have to say, there was one time, a really beautiful time. We went to Long Beach, University of Long Beach, Long Beach University. And it was an African marketplace at the Long Beach University. Mm-hmm. And who was speaking? Haki Madhubuti, who is the founder of Red Sea Press, I believe that's what it's wow. called. And, you know, he was given a talk, a Black Power talk, and it was great. She got to meet him. That was a plus. And then we were walking through the African marketplace. Bless you, my love. And this is the strangest thing, that the Africans were like, ah, she's beautiful. Who is this? And I'm like, that's Afia. That's, and they were like, ah, she's got an African name. So she became like the village baby, you know, like
that's awesome.
as we were walking through the aisle, people were like throwing things, like putting a kufi on her head, putting a bracelet on her wrist, putting, you know, just something in her hand, because that's blessings for Africans, right? It's like, oh, let the baby bless us. Let the baby bless us. You know? And so I was like, this is what it means to be embraced by your culture, to be embraced by the community.
Yeah.
And I realized it was like, those are the kinds of experiences that I wanted her and my grandson to have as well.
Hallelujah. I think that's amazing, because what I found even in my own life is marrying my work with my children. You know, we homeschool our kids, but every experience that we're able to have, that's what we do. And so we're really immersed in our faith as Messianic Hebrews. And so like everything, help them understand, help them to have compassion for other cultures and people by understanding that, hey, you know, this is why they do what they do. This is why this is the way it is. But that gives them an understanding of the world so that they understand, well, one, feel validated in their own, you know, beliefs and their lifestyle for our culture, but then also understanding the others so that it's not automatic close off, you know, like, oh, well, that's them. You know, it's just balance.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. I was telling my my grandson, I said, you know what? I can't wait to travel with you, grandson. Aww. He's like, yes. And I said, we're going to go so many places. He said, yes. I said, we're going to speak different languages. He said, yes. You know, so, you know, that work-life balance piece. And now, because I know I'm a, you know, I'm an educator, I can take I can take my work with me. I can take him to a conference. I can go to a conference. You know, I can take him. I mean, I was like, okay, let's all go to Bahrain. And it was like, oh, it's not a good time, you know, for all of us to go to Bahrain right now. But I'm like, I've got a place we can go. Aww. And so, you know, we're thinking about a family trip to Italy, possibly Paris.
Wonderful.
But for me, like the work-life balance, it really is, it is a culmination of everything now. I mean, really, I was writing my first novel with my daughter on my lap, you know. Wow. Right. And writing the novel, you know, so and she didn't have electronic gadgets like our kids have now. She didn't have any of that. This is over 30 years ago. Oh my gosh. So, yeah. So, but in terms of the self-care part, I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. So when I say I travel out of the country with or without my daughter, sometimes I would, if I went without, and I would go to a place that I knew had a great spa.
Hey, you know, what's wrong with that?
I'd say, okay, I'm going to go to the beach, or I'm going to go meditate here, or I'm going to go to just to the library, you know, here, and I'm going to, you know, sit in the library for an hour and read or something like that, and then come back and then talk to my daughter about what I read. So, like, the self-care part is absolutely important.
Yes, I mean, self-care is something that we often fall short on, right? Especially because mothers, we tend to give, but we don't pour back into ourselves. So whether it's reading scripture or just finding a place to just really focus and, you know, meditate on the word, or, you know, or even just, you know, having a cup of coffee and just having a moment to say, okay, this is just me time. Don't call me mom. I don't want to hear it. You know, these are all things that are so important, that whatever version of self-care that we do, we need to be intentional and mindful of that. Because honestly, we're not going to push anywhere else towards our careers or our health goals if we don't have the right mindset to do it. It's just not happening.
Yes. Yeah. And at the same time, too, it's interesting because we have to think about, so a lot of my self-care involves travel. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of my self-care involves
we couldn't see her, it's okay.
It involves travel and then massage or you know, a pampering, you know, some kind of pampering piece. But at the same time, I haven't done any destination trips, and I know a lot of women do destination trips with their girlfriends for, you know, kind of like, okay, we've got to take care of ourselves. I like solo travel.
I understand. I've been the same way. Everywhere I've been.
Because you don't have to like adhere to anyone else's schedule.
Yes. It's easier when it's like your spouse or something, but when it's like a bunch of girlfriends, like, oh, well, you know, I'm like, oh, let's go.
Okay, we were in Egypt. Okay, this is a great story. We were in Egypt all together. Egypt was supposed to be my trip. That was my, and my daughter was like, I want to go. And my daughter's, at the time, fiance was like, I want to go too, bet. And then her two god sisters were like, we want to go to Egypt. And I was post-divorce trip. How did this, get to be? And so we were there and we had done like a lot of like things together. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go to the Alexandria Library because I'm a nerd. And
that's not nerdy. It's beautiful. I may be biased.
I mean, thank you so much. And I can't remember who. One of the god sisters was like, why are we going to a library? And I was like, you know what? You can go home. You can go.
Like, you don't need to be here. Goodbye.
Go back to America because this is my trip. And
the
that's
knowledge
so
in the library alone. Like, come on.
You did not have to come with me to the Alexandria Library. So after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to go to this mosque by myself because I want to go to this mosque and I want to. And then the other god sister was like, I'll go with you. I'll go, you know, but we'll be cool. I'll be cool with, you know, I was like, okay. But it's really about the experience. Yeah, no, she did not. So that was cool. That was really cool. But I like solo travel. Solo travel to me is self-care and pampering. It's a way to let my mind just kind of release from the work grind because I work a lot. I'm working on I just finished a book of poetry about Nina Simone.
Wow.
And it's in the editing phases now. I'm working on a second memoir. My second memoir actually is about travel. It's travel and relationships and spirituality.
Wow.
Because I've had some really interesting experiences abroad and in America. I'm working on a textbook about creative writing as well. Just kind of how to do the things that people keep asking me, like, you know, how do we write poetry about heritage and lineage and how do we, you know, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a textbook and we'll use it and it can be used for college and it can be used for lay people too. Anyone who wants to.
That's awesome. Well, as a lay person, I'm definitely going to get that book. I love writing and it's something that I've been doing. It's one of the things that give me solace as well. But a lot of the writing I do is a bunch of self-help, but I love creative writing. You know, there are a few books that I want to write that just positive and great for, like, you know, teens and kids. But I would love to write something that is more for the grown-ups that want a good story, but just something that, you know, a lot of stories nowadays, they tend to include intimacy, and I'm like, we can cut that out, you know, so.
Yes.
But that's something that in poetry, it's so powerful, and when you look at our history, you know, spoken word and those things, that's something that we've always done. So to have more of that available, I think that's amazing.
So you write poetry and fiction and nonfiction, or?
So I write fiction, nonfiction. I haven't tapped into poetry yet. At least I haven't in like 10 years. But I want to, I'm not there yet. But for the fiction and nonfiction, that is more the push right now for me. So I'm working on that to just provide something else for our people that shines us in a positive light, but also helping our children to see themselves. And interesting stories that don't have to end in or begin in tragedy. Like, I know a lot of us, we have tragic backstories, but there are some good that we can showcase, and it'll give people hope. Especially in this time frame, you know, we need more positivity.
We need it. Yeah, we do. We really do. I mean, as a poet, my job is to testify. You know, poetry is my first love.
Yes.
And so, yes, I'm always looking for the beautiful at the end of the story, you know, even if we're writing about, so I'm working on something about Black women across antiquity. So, you know, from from Venus Hottentot, you know, on mm-hmm. probably before her, actually. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit of a textbook on Black women.
Wow.
And so there will definitely be the sense of resilience in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I know we need that. Some of the reality. Yes. Some of the reality too.
Yes, reality is important. It's just one of those things where after a while, not that it's too much, not something is too much reality, but yes. when we focus only on the pain and there really isn't a solid out, like we need to see that out. Like, what can this look like? What could this picture look like?
Yes.
But
yeah,
no, I think we need to hear it.
Children definitely need to see themselves in that positive light.
Yes.
And I love the movement of, you know, the Black girl magic and the, you know, and just, the positivity about hair and afros and locks.
Yes.
And, you know, I love all of that. And we need it. I didn't grow up with that, right? I yes. locked my hair because it was a spiritual choice for me.
Mm-hmm.
Locking my hair. I did not lock my daughter's hair because I wanted her to choose for herself. Like,
yeah.
do you want to lock or do you not want to lock? And she never locked, but her hair has always been natural for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And her in college, she went to school here in New York. Her roommates were mostly Asian, all Asian. And they were like, your hair is magic. You can do anything with your hair. Like, you can press it down or you can wear it into a poofy ball. Like, your hair is magic. And so, right. And so I love that sense that our bodies, our culture, the things that were once derogatory or, mm-hmm. you know, were stereotypical, there was a bad connotation. I love how it's all positive right now.
Yes.
I will say, the thick, you know, how the common spelling, not THICK, but mm-hmm. THC. I'm like, yay, good job, you know, good on us. I will say I was a little like shocked with Lizzo's.
Goodness.
When Lizzo came out, I was like, oh, I think that's too much. I think, you know, and she probably thinks, I'm not trying to body shame.
And listen, it's not bashing, it's reality. I feel like, well, especially because me being in the health space, like there's nothing wrong with loving your skin and we are made to be different sizes. But there are points where, one, more self-respect for ourselves, you know, our beauty and all of that. There are some things that should just be reserved for the one we love, period. You know, I'm sorry. Like, that's just the way, you know, I'm not sorry, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to offend anybody, you do you, but there's a reason why women in other nations have more respect than we do. There's a more of a value there. So love ourselves, but let's not cross the line. We don't have to be sheer and naked.
And I have to say too, in context to what our society looks like right now. Mm-hmm. So, okay, we can go back to the past. I hear like my students saying, but didn't Africans not wear, you know, clothes, or didn't the, you know, the women not wear dresses?
Certain tribes.
And there are certain tribes that actually did that. And it was considered all cool in our Western indoctrination, in our Western understanding of that, it feels to me like, hopefully, I know she's proud of her body as I am. Of a lot of mine, but I know when I'm crossing over to a point where, okay, I need to do something for myself because this is my self-image.
Yes.
You know, and that was her self-image. But in terms of where we are right now, I just felt like that was, it wasn't a statement I would make and something that I would do.
I completely agree. I just feel like, for us, we're working so hard to just have people look at us as a respectable human being, you know, and that's just a scale. They're not really seeing our beauty. They're seeing us as less than. And so there are just certain statements that shouldn't be made right now. Obviously, but you know,
I haven't written anything about it because I'm mm-hmm. still just kind of trying to negotiate that space and that understanding of what that means for me. Because I always think collectively, you know, I think about how we represent each other as Black women. That's how I think, you know, and I think, oh, I don't want to be, I'm not represented right there. That doesn't represent me. That statement of the sheer dress, the size represents me. The statement of the sheer dress in public, that doesn't represent me with everything all hanging out right now in my life as a woman. But I do think collectively, and I've always told my students this, I taught at Hampton University for 13 mm-hmm. years, and we would dissect like the videos, like rap videos and Beyonce and, you know, and it basically do critical analysis, you know, on it. And they were like, why are you so hard, Professor Buchanan? Why can't we do X, Y, and Z? And I said, no, our culture is beautiful. We are so multifaceted. You know, I like ratchet music. You know, I like all this. I said, at the same time, I just think about how I want my daughter to be represented. And there's room for all of us. I have to say that there's room for a Cardi B. There's room for a, you know, Indie Irie. There's room for all of it. But in terms of who I want my daughter to see, I would want my daughter to see the Indie Irie. You know, I would want my daughter to see this. So, and those who like the Cardi B's, she's like, good, don't listen to my music or don't show, you know, good for you.
Yeah, like, I look at that and I think that, you know, we look at the world today and yes, yeah. there is a space in this world for like the Cardi B's and the Lizzo's, but what yeah. representation are we looking for our children? You know? And so right. I agree with you. Like there is no way on Yah's green earth, I'm gonna let my children see Cardi B or Lizzo. That's just not happening. But they have valuable influences in their lives in our community that will help them yeah. be the women that they should be. You know, to right. be able to value themselves and make a decision yeah. on who they are as a solid woman, yeah. You know, in their future. And I think it's beautiful that there are parents out there that are looking to create something that their children can say, this is my positive image. I value right. I'm not looking for attention. I'm looking for the version of me.
Right. Exactly. That's a really well said. I love that. I'm looking for the version of me.
Yes.
And I will confirm and affirm that version of me.
Right? So for a question, what advice would you say to a mother who is in constant internal, external battle with like the world, but desires to be free from the vicious cycle of self-doubt, frustration, or fear?
So I would say do what I did for my daughter. I didn't have a television in our house until she was maybe 7.
Oh my gosh, say that again, because TV is horrible.
We didn't have a TV until she was 7, you know, and literally she came home one day from school and she was like, Mom, everyone's got a TV. Can we please have a TV? So then I got a television, but I covered it for most of the week and she would only watch it for a very like small amount of time, you know, during the weekend. And so that was one of the ways that I tried to contain what society projected to my child and to maintain what I wanted to project to my child. And at the same time, I did what Frances Cress Wilson, who was a Black educator and theorist, and she said, we need to show our children the darkest images of Black people, like the darkest of dark, to counteract what white society, when they leave your home or when they're driving in a car and they see a billboard with a skinny, thin, like blonde, black, white, you know, white woman, you know, we need to show them that we are beautiful no matter what.
Yes.
In all of our contextualization and all of our complexions and our hairstyles, and we need to show them that we are powerful, that they are embraced, that they see themselves in your home. So get those dark Black pictures, color. She said, literally, she said, if you get a book and you like that book, color the people in it brown. Mm-hmm. You know, color them Black. Color them, you know, so they can see. This is how you are represented. This is how gorgeous you are. So that's a recommendation. That's my advice as well. You know, is to make sure. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. There's so much beauty to that, because like with our children, you know, we help them understand who they are, you know, as Hebrew people, we focus on, okay, this is what we do. This is how we do it. This is what the world is like. You are beautiful. Your skin is beautiful. Your hair is beautiful. Everything about you is beautiful. You're intelligent. You know, the things they watch on TV, we really don't do cable. That's just not for us. We do have YouTube, but we're very selective. And so what we do is that we're honest with them. We're like, listen, this is why we don't watch this. This is why we don't watch this. Why we don't listen to this. But when you watch this, you're learning something. And our girls, because of that, they understand. They don't fight against it. And they're super crafty. Our daughter is over here. She's nine. And I think it's wonderful to be able to have that, where take away the frustrations and the self-doubt that we've had ourselves, and just tell our children, like, okay, this is what you can do to be amazing. Mm-hmm. Learn this new skill. So yes. I love that. I love
it. Yes. Learn this skill. Toni Morrison, a prolific author. If we don't know who Toni Morrison is, you must get Toni Morrison's work, all of her books. But she says, children will do what you show them, not what you say to them.
Yes, that is.
They will follow your example. They will not necessarily follow what you tell them to do.
Exactly. Like, I mean, honestly, one of the women I know in our assembly, she was talking about how with her daughter, she was telling her to love her hair, but then she wasn't loving her hair. So when she decided to completely go natural and love herself, then she saw that in her daughter. And I know that, like, with our children, like, our daughters are so in love with themselves.
Oh, nice.
They wait, but they just love themselves so much. And, like, they just, everything, they draw hair, or our daughter's like, I'm locking the baby's hair, you know, and she's in love with herself. So I think that is so true. You know, children, when they see it and they see it loved, then they will love it too. And I think that's so valuable.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is. I write poetry like that. I write poetry. Mm-hmm. One of the poems that I wrote, I guess it was 2 years ago, maybe, mm-hmm. but I continue to read it because it's a poem where about the young black wrestler, Andrew Johnson,
mm-hmm.
his coach was a racist coach, and his coach said, you can't wrestle with your locks, and you have to cut your locks.
Yeah,
I think you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that story. Mm-hmm.
And so one of his, I guess, junior coaches or whatever, cut his hair.
Yeah, that story.
It was so horrific. And I wrote a poem to basically give him back his pride and give him back his respect, you know, to say, you are not the cutting of your locks.
Yes.
You are instead a beautiful black boy, you know, and I'm thinking I should turn that poem into a children's story, you know, and just like, you know, this is what it means to love yourself no matter what happens, no matter what society tries to tell you or do to you.
Yes.
This is what it means. This is what it means to love yourself consistently.
I love that, because it's something where is lost. A lot of times we'll have something, some kind of trauma happen to us. People will tell us to get up, but they don't tell us to love ourselves. So we're constantly getting up broken, whether mending the pieces with gold, you know? And so it's just, I think having a story like that and helping kids to see that even when trauma happens, you can still come out more refined and perfected. You see that a lot in this walk of life. You know, I think about, what is it, either Chinese or Japanese culture where they mend everything with gold? That's what I think of all the time. So it's more valuable when you piece it together. So if we mend it with gold and with our learnings and understandings, then we come out stronger, we come out better and more successful. And then maybe next time, you know, in that scenario, he can defend himself and say, no, there's nothing wrong. There's no advantage to my locks in winning this fight. You're just mad because I'm awesome.
Exactly. Yes. You just as we used to say, don't be mad. Don't be mad.
Don't be mad. All right. So at the Effortless Mom Podcast, we love to provide actionable advice to make life appear effortless. So what 3 tips would you give someone who's seeking to overcome obstacles and gain self-discipline in order to achieve their goals?
Yeah, the self-discipline in order to achieve your goal. I really think I follow the credence of, you know, create the habit of something. Mm-hmm. So once you create the habit, I know they say it takes 21 days to form a new habit. You do it consistently. For example, if you want to walk 3 to 5 times a week, and it's like, okay, no matter what, I want to form this habit. I'm going to walk 3 to 5 times this week. And so this is what I'm going to do. Or if you want to eat fruit, fresh fruit, make it readily, like something that you can readily grab. You know, like blueberries in the morning, or an apple, set that, you know, someplace in the refrigerator where you can see that, as opposed to cereal or as opposed to something that's unhealthy. Create the habit of a thing, and that becomes your discipline. And again, you can set alarms for yourself. You know, you can set alarms, you can set on your schedule, your calendar. You know, you can do that for yourself as well. But I think that's how we form a sense of discipline. And then also, since your sense of discipline creates more space for your sense of self-care.
Yes.
Right? It really does. It's like, okay, I'm going to do this. This is also self-care to walk and to eat more fruit. And this is also self-care to make sure that I'm healthy for my children. You know, this is also a sense of, so it all kind of, you know, blends in. But again, I go back to create that habit. And it's something that I continually work on, you know. I have COVID weight. You know, I've got my COVID weight. I'm trying to, like, figure out a way to, you know, to get back to, you know, to where I used to be before COVID. And so I'm really, I've just bought a treadmill. It's in the living room. And it's like, okay, I need a treadmill more than I need a chair. You know? So I'm really trying to do the recreation of that, the habit of a thing, to form that discipline for your sense of self-care, for your sense of self-awareness, self-worth, I think, as well. So that's my advice.
I love that. So one app that I love using is called Habit Now, but it's helped me to create new habits, put your task in there, everything. And then if you include your self-care tasks as well as just healthier living, like drinking more water, literally put it in there as a task so you can check it off. Having that visual, because you're reading it, you're hitting all your senses, and you're making sure that you feel accomplished by doing it. So I think that's excellent advice. And as far as like weight around this time frame, I'm gonna be honest, there are ways around that. Very, very much so. And it just comes on like time of day, what are you battling with? But we can talk off call.
Yes, but definitely. Let's do that as well. And also breathe. I have a reminder in my phone to just breathe.
Yes.
And when that happens, I'm like, you know, and I realize my face is tense. Mm-hmm. My body is tense from whatever it is I'm working on. I'm like, okay, just breathe.
It's life. It's what drives us. We need that breath, but just having a moment to just reflect, you know, the Hebrew word is selah, you know, so you're really reflecting on it and just understanding like, okay, this is my awareness, this is who I am in this moment, and this is what I'm going to do. Especially when you need a breath and you're stressed or someone made you angry, like breathe. It's so necessary.
Just breathe.
Well, you know? Shonda, I thank you so much for being on this podcast. You are welcome as always. And I would love for you to just share like where our audience can find you and any additional, like I would love to hear more about the Black Indian memoir that you've already written, because you mentioned some of the other products, but where can we find that stuff for you?
So my website, I have a link on my website, www.shondabuchanan, shondabuchanan.com. Also Amazon has Black Indian. It has my, 2 collections of poetry, Who's Afraid of Black Indians and Equipoise, Poems from Goddess Country. And then it has the two anthologies as well. But if anyone is interested in taking one of my writing workshops, I usually post those on my website. I need to update that. I'm going to be honest. That's my discipline piece. I need to be honest with updating that. And then Instagram is definitely a way that anyone can reach me. Instagram, I check Instagram more than I check Facebook. So yeah, so those are ways that people can buy my books and reach me. I've got a couple of workshops in the country coming up, and I think I'm actually probably going to do a writing workshop in December at some point. If not December, then January. And so I'll be posting those on Instagram as well.
Awesome. I'm really excited about that. And Instagram, you're very inspirational. So I do recommend people following Shonda on Instagram. I love it. I love following you because of just how much you inspire me. So I'm really thankful that you're on here.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much. So thank you everyone for listening into the podcast. Please remember to visit lovingmytemple.com, and we'll see you soon. Take care. Shalom.